ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Global roaming. We did try to stay weekly. The news said no. So 5 days a week it is. I'm Hamish McDonald.
I'm Geraldine Doogue, and now joined by esteemed colleagues Latika Burke and Kylie Morris. Search for Global Roaming on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's 6 p.m. on the 9th of November, 1989. And right now, you are in the front row of a press conference in East Berlin, Soviet-controlled German Democratic Republic.
So everything had the kind of grey branding of the GDR.
There's about a dozen journalists around you here expecting to report on a small governmental update. Nothing earth-shattering. That is, until something goes wrong. The man speaking to the press is asked a question he doesn't expect. Well, he improvises.
So he starts first fumbling around with his glasses, then he turns the pages of the paper that was handed to him back and forth, trying to look for the answer to the journalist's questions.
That man says three words that will change history forever.
He didn't think that people on the ground could change world history, but they can.
I'm Mark Fennell, and welcome to one of our favourite episodes from the first year of No One Saw It Coming. It's the story of how a blunder at a press conference would go on to bring down not just the Berlin Wall, but an entire regime, and no one saw it coming.
Necessary to bring some dramatic change to the society of the GDR. It's absolutely necessary, because when this will not happen, nobody will have a control about the masses.
In the late 80s, decades into the Cold War, East Germany had a problem.
In the fall of 1989, the East German government had come under increased pressure to, institute some reforms to cater to the populace that was increasingly disgruntled.
So this is German historian Dr. Katrin Schreiter, and she actually lived through these days when Germany was divided between the US-backed West and the Soviet-controlled East. And right now in the East, things are getting pretty tense because the people here, they've been pressuring the government to give them more freedom.
And so they started to at least make a show of opening up. And part of that was holding press conference whenever new announcements were to be made. And so this press conference of 9 November 1989 is part of that.
And the person who used to speak at these press conferences was a man by the name of Gunter Schabowski. Now, I've watched a few of these on YouTube, and he would execute these conferences with the charisma of like a parent who's not angry with you, but just a bit disappointed, like read these proclamations out with his glasses sort of teetering on the edge of his nose. And as ordinary as he seems, Katrin, he is a very important character in this story, isn't he?
Yes. For the majority of the existence of the GDR, he was in charge of telling the national press what to write. The media and the GDR itself was highly censored. So now, in the fall of 89, he all of a sudden, with this new spirit of showing transparency and the will to reform, they invited the International Press Corps to press conferences. And these, of course, were journalists that wouldn't just be told what to write, but that also had questions. So that was something new for Gunter Schabowski to handle. And that is exactly how then this fateful evening came to pass.
This fateful evening is the 9th of November. And just a few minutes before that press conference is due to start, Gunter is handed this unassuming note, something about a change in travel regulations.
So he didn't really study the note and decided to announce this change in regulations for travel towards the West just a few minutes before the end of the press conference. And what he announced was that with immediate effect, the East German citizens would be allowed to cross the border to the West.
So that tiny piece of paper ends up being an incredible inflection point in history that changes lives for thousands, tens of thousands of Germans. But I think to understand that moment, why it's so important, we are going to need to go back all the way to Germany at the end of World War II. And at this point, Germany is pretty much just being carved up.
Yes, after the end of World War II, the Allies did decide that Germany would be put under a state of military occupation, and the four Allies divided up the territory among themselves. The Soviet Union would get the eastern part, and the Western Allies divided the western part up among themselves.
I know you were very young when the Berlin Wall fell, spoiler alert. But what is it like to grow up in a country that is actually two countries?
The funny part about that is that I wasn't aware of the division of Germany, that there was another part that was meant to be joined or rejoined to the part that I was living in. So I see that as an expression of the West German mentality towards the division of Germany. West Germany did not acknowledge East Germany as a sovereign state. They, for the first couple of decades of the division, actually exerted pressure on third countries not to acknowledge the GDR, not to engage in diplomatic relations. So that I see is very much represented in the way how nobody really talked about East Germany and kind of pretended it wasn't there.
I wonder what that was like for people living in East Germany.
Their awareness of West Germany was much higher than vice versa. Obviously, there was a competition between communism and capitalism during the Cold War. And so there was always a little bit of, not envy, but the wish that things would be different in East Germany and could be similarly successful when it comes to living standards and also political freedoms as in West Germany. So there was always the wish within East Germany to reform communism.
Okay, so you have East Berlin and West Berlin, and I think these days, at least, we do like to think of it as this hard border. But after World War II, those first few years, it was a bit more porous than people might imagine, wasn't it?
Yes. While Germany was divided in 1949, the border was only slowly fortified across the country. And the biggest loopholes, so to say, remained within Berlin. East Berliners, what even have jobs in West Berlin and commute over to the West on a daily basis. There were underground train lines connecting the two parts of Berlin. However, this loophole was then also used by anyone unhappy with life in East Germany to emigrate to the West without permission to do so. That created long-term problems for East Germany because it became a brain drain.
So then in one evening in 1961, this barbed wire goes up. What were the sort of reactions at that point?
Exactly. So on the night of it was a Sunday, 13th of August, 1961, all of a sudden construction vehicles and military approached the border and started fortifying it through, you know, building walls. Barbed wire was put everywhere. And the people lived in these streets. They saw this happening and panicked, of course. Many tried to jump the ever higher fence. sometimes the border would also literally divide houses, so people would go into the house to the other side and then jump out of the window to get to the west. And it was a very dramatic situation. Livelihoods were affected overnight, but for the general population, the West remained a distant dream.
I think when most people think about the Berlin Wall, you do tend to picture these huge concrete slabs with like razor wire over the top. But it actually had a few iterations, didn't it?
Yes, eventually it was a proper strip of bare land with higher and higher divisions. Eventually the famous concrete slabs that we know from all the footage of the Berlin Wall coming down, they were erected. They went not just up, but also into the ground. There were automated machine guns eventually. There were guard dogs. There were booby traps. There was a shoot-to-kill order. The border was highly guarded by border guards, which, you know, had the order to shoot at anyone who tried to run across, fly across, swim across. Part of the border was also along rivers. So it was really a symbol of not just a barrier, but it was a symbol of the most authoritarian elements of this regime in East Germany.
So by the time we get to the 1980s, this regime is coming under a lot of pressure. You've got that very famous speech by US President Ronald Reagan, 1987 at the Brandenburg Gate.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
There are more and more stories of East Germans trying to escape, and thousands of people in East Germany are coming out and starting to protest the government.
The government eventually feels like they need to show a bit of good face to the population and become more transparent, be more communicative, less, well, dictatorial, and explain, to a certain extent, explain themselves. So that's where the press conferences then come from, to show not only their own population, but also to the world, a more open form of socialism, so to say, socialism with a human face. They can actually at least convey change without there actually being change. So that was the idea. And then they were not meant to revolutionize the system. They were not meant to do away with the German division or do away with East Germany or do away with socialism. No, what it was meant to do, or the hopes were, that it would grant the opportunity to those people who were really disgruntled with the system to leave without causing a lot of problems for East Germany.
And so it's against that background that this press conference happens, where Günther is handed a piece of paper. He hasn't had a chance to be briefed. And he just sort of, he kind of just blurts out, doesn't he, that people can leave immediately.
Exactly. And one of the journalists asks, well, but when does this take effect? When will East Germans be allowed to travel to West Germany? Schabowski sits there in his gray suit in a very drab conference hall, fumbling a little bit around with his papers, trying to find the answer in those regulations. And at some point, he just says, well, mumbles, I guess, well, with immediate effect. And that was basically the nail in the coffin. The journalists thought they had the scoop of a lifetime. They didn't really wait for proper clarification. A few follow-up questions followed, but Günther Schabowski didn't do a good job of, limiting the extent of what he had just declared, because actually had he read a little bit or gone back to some of the regulations, he could have made clear that citizens needed to still apply for visas. And that is, of course, a bureaucratic hurdle, right, where,
you
the
can control
government
the flow
can
there.
Control. Exactly. So he didn't remind journalists of that, and they just rushed out and wanted to be the first to report it. So only 3 minutes after the press conference ended at 7 p.m., so at 7:03, Reuters sent out the message. A minute later, the German press agency sent out the same announcement. And from there on, it was in the mediascape. However, by 10:30, when the next late night news program was on, the anchorman of that program became much more optimistic about the situation, and he basically declared the wall open. East Germans could watch West German TV at the time, and encouraged by these words, more and more people started to go to the border crossings in East Berlin to see what the situation really was like.
Thousands of people in Berlin have spent the hell night crossing between East and West.
No one quite believed it at first. Gradually throughout the night, small crowds began to build up on both sides of the wall, then larger and larger crowds.
Thousands of West Germans joined in, some brandishing champagne.
Just unbelievable scenes. At the moment, there are people with large bunches of flowers handing out to the people as they come across.
The border guards didn't know what was going on. They had seen the press conference, but they had not received any orders, neither for processing requests to go out, nor what to do if people would come to the border. And so they were surprised by the swelling crowds.
On the western side, there are lots and lots of ambulances in case there's trouble, but the border guards are just standing by and watching.
Tried to dispel them. Police came, you know, with megaphones trying to send people home. But the people didn't budge. They stayed around. They requested that they would be let through the border crossing. And so the choice for the border guards was to either create horrible scenes of mass violence.
They did use water cannon at one stage to try and stop people, but that failed.
Or letting these people pass. And they faithfully decided for the latter.
How many people passed that night thanks to that one pronouncement?
Well, at Bornholmer Straße alone, it was about 20,000 people who crossed that night.
20,000?
Exactly.
In a night?
In a night, but across all of Berlin, it was about 68,000 plus more than 9,000 vehicles. And of those, surprisingly or not, about 45,000 people returned by the morning of the 10th of November, and about half of the vehicles. So some people used this as a way for permanent migration. Others were just curious to see West Germany for themselves. And they went over there, had a beer, celebrated with their friends, some reunited with family if they lived in the same city. But you have to remember, the next day they had to go back to work. Their fridge was full of food. Their children were at home in bed. So they had ample reason to come back.
But it's about the freedom of movement. It's not necessarily about escaping from one side to the other for everybody. It was about, well, it was about reunification, isn't it?
Yes, it was about, you know, ending the division. It was about going back to, or reuniting two parts of a country that culturally, linguistically, historically had belonged together. And this fateful night made it all possible.
So sometime before 7 p.m. that night, Gunther blurts out, effective immediately, people can pass through the Berlin Wall. Tens of thousands of people passed through that barrier that had sat in that city for decades. Do you think in that moment when Gunther said that he had any idea of the impact of that moment?
Not at all. He didn't think that the wall would come down because of a kind of innocuous comment he made at the end of a press conference. You know, he didn't think that people on the ground could change world history, but they can.
If Gunther hadn't said those words on that night, what do you think would have happened?
The East German state at that point was already facing bankruptcy. They were highly relying on Western money and credits in order to just keep the economy afloat. The state would have been completely bankrupt, and therefore, you know, usually political instability follows and so on and so forth. So eventually we would have seen some change within East Germany. What we have seen, a turn towards democracy, I'm not entirely sure. I think that process of change would have been much slower. I think German reunification would have not happened as quickly.
So this fumble in a press conference, do you think enough people know about it and all the things that tumbled from it?
I don't think that this is talked about enough. German reunification is often seen as something that was accomplished by high-level diplomacy, by Mikhail Gorbachev's willingness to reform the Soviet Union and to let go of his socialist satellite states in Central Eastern Europe. Very little credit is given to the courage of, you know, the ordinary citizens in East Germany, those who, you know, moved their lives across the border early on, those courageous East Germans who you took to the streets every Monday in cities across East Germany to ask for change, to ask for reform, that chanted, "We are the people. This is a people's republic. We should have a say. We are the people." And forced the hand of the East German government. The East German government naively thought they had the situation under control. But the developments were too fast to catch up with. And so here we really need to give credit to the East Germans, then also those who went to the wall that night, risking potentially their lives. And, you know, just be very thankful for the way how these developments turned out peacefully and without bloodshed.
Slowly yet surely, that wall, the Berlin Wall, is dismantled. And by 1990, official demolition begins. You were 9 years old when the Berlin Wall came down. What do you remember of that day?
Like most Germans in East and West, we learned about it on the news broadcast. And I knew that it was something special because my mother burst into tears. And she explained to me that, you know, East and West Germany had been divided for many decades, and that this was a historical moment where, you know, something that many Germans had hoped for a long time might come to pass, the reunification of Germany. The months that came after remained exciting, and I remember also the first time that we went to the former East. It was like a different world, but very interesting.
Moments like this with Günther at the press conference, why do you think they're worth remembering?
I think it's important for us to move away from the idea that history is just decided by big men and that there is a kind of a predetermined course of history. So moments like the press conference, Günter Schabowski's fumble, and, you know, the events that followed it, they show us the contingency of history. And I think that is a humbling and exciting element about the past.
Katrine, thank you so much.
No, thank you. Of course, it was my pleasure.
Dr. Katrine Schreiter is a senior lecturer in German and history at King's College London. My name's Mark Fennell, and this episode of No One Saw It Coming was produced by Zoe Ferguson on Gadigal Land in Sydney, Australia, for ABC Radio National. And as always, if you've got a story, you know, it doesn't even have to be a full story. It could just be an idea, some random bit you've heard. Let us know. Email us, noonesawitcoming@abc.net.au. Next week, we will be continuing to bring you some of our favourite episodes from the first year of the show. And it'll be a story of an unlikely character who you can thank for hot chips. The strange history of French fries next week on No One Saw It Coming. We'll see you then. Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.